A sneak peek at the upcoming PS5, and more coming up on today's episode of the Lazen Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lazen Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss the next episode. We do this daily around here, and we'd hate for you to miss an episode, so go ahead and do that, and be sure to share this episode with a friend. That's the only way the word gets around, but only to the friends that you trust. Obviously, you have friends who you'd rather be the bearer of news, and those who are part of your inner circle. So divvy that up how you will. Share it with those who you deem worthy. So also, we are available as a YouTube show over at youtube.com/technewsgadget. And if you're on the go, we offer an audio only option, a podcast in Apple, Google, Spotify, you name it, we're there. Just search for Latest in Tech News. Also, we have a giveaway going on currently, and you still have time to enter. The competition giveaway ends the end of August. For full details and the prize, head on over to technewsgadget.net/giveaway. Our feature story today that we'll be taking a look at is a leaked PS5 patent that might give us the best look at the console design yet. Also, we'll be taking a look at Microsoft's new Chromium-based Edge browser currently in beta. Also, we'll be taking a look at SpaceX's Starman, and his Tesla may have made a lap around the sun. And some funny news to follow there regarding that trip. Also, we'll be taking a look at, an article called Technology Alone Won't Make Your Kids Smarter. And the more I read this article, the more I tend to agree with the author. But we'll get into that in just a couple of minutes. We'll also be taking a look at the OnePlus TV. Yes, the first TV by OnePlus. Price, release date, and specs. All that coming up. We'll also be taking a look at Dell launching the OptiPlex 77 Ultra. Take a guess at where they crammed the desktop and monitor stand. Yeah, we'll be getting into that as well. And finally, we'll be taking a look at over 100 GameStop employees laid off, including members of Game Informer editorial. But before we do, let's head on over to Today in Tech History. All right, today is August 20th, 2019. On this day in 1911, the New York Times sends a telegram message to test how fast a commercial message could be sent around the world. Reading simply, this message, sent around the world, left at 7 p.m., traveled over 28,000 miles, and was relayed by 16 different operators. It arrived back at the Times only 16 and a half minutes later. Quite impressive, and the building, in case you guys are wondering, where the message originated is now called One Times Square and is best known for where the ball drops on New Year's Eve in New York. Also, on this day in history, in 1995, the New York Times published an article on the need to preserve obsolete hardware and software. The New York Times' George Johnson reminisces about obsolete computer hardware and software in a column titled, Let's Boot Up the Trash 80s and Play Some Oldies. Written just before the release of Microsoft Windows 95, the article bemoaned the lack of a home, virtual or otherwise, for computer antiquities. The fate of Windows 3.1 was obvious. In digital bonfires across the country, millions of copies of the old software will be wiped from hard drives to make way for the new. One by one, all those carefully crafted bits, the ones and zeros that form the gears and pulleys of Microsoft's contraption, will disappear in infinitesimal puffs of heat. Software, however, is preserved by many individual collectors and computer enthusiasts, and by the Computer History Museum. So, not nothing to be too concerned about, but how are you supposed to look back on where you came from to get you to the point without, you know, having something to look back on, preserved for history? I mean, that's what museums and libraries and the like are for. Anyways, right? Right? Well, with that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. Oh, on the screen right now is what the PS5 might look like. Unbelievable. Oh, perfection indeed. Well, it looks like it's cooling off with a V-shaped ventilation system. This is definitely interesting, definitely different. For those of you watching the YouTube show, let me know your thoughts down in the comment section down below. And if you're listening via audio, you're completely missing the visual part of this show. Like I said, the articles that we covered today, as well as any videos and images, can be found over at the show notes for today at technewsgadget.net. So the PS5 is still over a year away from release, but as we hear more about Sony's consoles, features, specifications, and PS5 games, it's not hard to get excited even this long in advance. Now, it was before this patent came our way, showing a Sony registered device that is very possibly the PlayStation 5 itself. The patent in question was registered as a Sony electronic device on August 13th after applying for the patent back in May of this year, showing a console-shaped device that seems highly unlikely to be anything but the PS5. The patent page that we have is Let's Go Digital. Haven't found the WIPO listing itself, but is based on pretty good authority, at least from Tech Radar here, and are usually pretty reliable source. The patent is registered through the World Intellectual Property Office, with Sony technical director Yoshiro Utori also being listed on the patent as its designer. So, with the patent, what does this mean? What's most fascinating about the PS5 patent is its V-shaped design, possible in reference to the Roman numeral V, meaning 5. On the diagram, you can see a number of USB ports for DualShock controllers, as well as a line of buttons that would likely correspond to ejecting discs, turning on the power, and other connectivity features. There's a thin slot that's likely the disk drive, too. Now, the ribbed sides and edges appear to show the ventilation system, which would need to be pretty substantial to deal with the PS5's massive jump in power over the current generation of PlayStation consoles. Finished projects never really look quite like their patent designs, of course. It's very possible this might be the placeholder image or an early build of what will eventually become the PS5. Sony does like to feature a numerical count on its consoles, however, with tiers being cut into the shape of the PS3 and PS4, in case you didn't know, to represent the increasing number. So it's very possible that this is the PS5 design so many of us will have in our homes starting in the holiday season of 2020. So what do you guys think? Here, I'll scroll back up. If it's not the final product, it could be very well close to it. Very well close to it. Change a couple things here or there. Obviously, you're going to probably figure it out as they're building it and putting it together. Oh, this doesn't work here. This breaks that. Or this doesn't fit at all. So, I don't know. Let me know your thoughts. Here's what I'm thinking so far. Man, they're taking definitely a different angle with the PS5. Something, finally, I hope, handles the ventilation properly this time. I mean, my PS4 that I have currently, the only ventilation system is on the back of it. And you're like, well, how in the world is it supposed to vent out air and get new air in if it's on the back of the... It's kind of confusing. And if it's set up the way that most in-home users have it, it's almost up against the wall, so it's not really getting good ventilation going on here. At least with a design like this, it'll be able to push the air out so long as you don't put anything on top of it. Don't put stuff on top of your consoles. There's no other way to get ventilation in and out. But this would actually help a lot in that arena in terms of ventilation, in terms of keeping the power level where it's at, in terms of not crashing it on accident and blaming it on purpose. Well, I would happen to know this from user error, but I don't know. That's my thoughts so far. As I said before, let me know what you think. Links will be in the show notes over at technewsgadget.net. All right, moving on. Microsoft's new Chromium-based Edge browser is now in beta, and it had been in testing stages for a while, but Microsoft today launched the first beta builds of its new Chromium-based Edge browser for Windows and Mac. The new beta channel, which will be seeing an update roughly every 6 weeks, will join the existing dev and canary channels, which will continue to see daily and weekly updates, respectively. Over the course of the last few months of preview releases in the existing channels, Microsoft has gathered about 140,000 pieces of feedback. With this and a lot of telemetry also received from early adopters, the company now feels that it knows enough about how well Edge works on a wide range of machines that's stable enough for enthusiasts web developers and business users to give it a try before its wider release. Let's just hope that it's better than the joke of a browser that it came out with prior to this. Beta represents the most stable preview channel, as features are added to beta only after they have cleared quality testing in first Canary and then the dev channel. Microsoft explains in today's announcement, major version updates can be expected roughly every 6 weeks alongside periodic minor updates for bug fixes and security. And here it is. Here's a look on the screen. How's it looking like? Looks like Chrome, doesn't it? Well, yeah, because it's based off of Chrome. At this point, Microsoft has put all of the infrastructure in place to update the browser and test it thoroughly through the early preview phase if need be. That means the team can release an unscheduled beta when it discovers a bug and know that its update systems will work just fine. Just like Chrome, Firefox, and most other browsers, Microsoft will continue to test new features in a Canary and developer build before enabling them. Features, obviously, if they work out in Canary in terms of buttons to control Spotify, YouTube, and other video and music services. You can probably expect to see that coming on as well. Let me see. With this release, keep in mind, Microsoft is also launching a security bounty for Edge. So for those of you who are interested in bounties and like going hunting for bugs, security researchers who find and disclose any high-impact vulnerabilities in the beta and dev channel releases are eligible for rewards of up to $15,000. So for those of you who like to do that, enjoy, have fun, and good luck. As a Microsoft spokesperson stressed in an interview ahead of today's release, the team is also quite happy about the fact that it has now contributed more than 1,000 commits to the Chromium project. That project is led mostly by Google engineers, but it's good to see that Microsoft plans for ramping up its own contributions that are paying off. By moving to Chromium, Microsoft gave up developing its own engine. Smart move. At the time, the company argued that continuing to invest in an engine that only had a few users wasn't exactly useful in keeping the overall web ecosystem healthy, and that it could have more impact by working on Chromium instead. That work, it seems, is starting to pay off. To which we said, duh. It almost sounds like, what's his name? On Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Jake Peralta.
Adoy!
So, for those of you interested, you can switch to the new Edge in beta releases. Despite its preview status, the browser has been very stable on both Windows 10 and Mac so far. Some versions were better than others, but according to the author of this article, didn't experience any major blocking bugs in the process, and Edge has proven to be a fast and stable browser thus far. That bodes well for the beta program. So, by show of hands, how many of you are going to be using the new Edge browser once it comes out of beta, or if it's in beta, let me know. I won't. I'm probably going to be sticking with Chrome. Sorry, Microsoft. You got to really do a lot if you want to impress me to get back onto your clunky, old-fashioned, outdated browser, and then your joke over release of a browser. And seeing as how this browser is going to be very similar to the features already existing in Chrome, might just stick with Chrome. But remains to be seen. All right, moving on. SpaceX's Starman and Elon Musk's Tesla have made a lap around the sun. Now, I obviously announced this earlier in the year. For those of you who didn't know, Starman and the Tesla Roadster have actually been launched into space on a Falcon Heavy rocket. Let me recap. Starman and his deep space ride have completed their first lap around the sun. The spacesuit-clad mannequin who sits behind the wheel of SpaceX founder and CEO Elon Musk's red Tesla Roadster launched on February 6, 2018 on the inaugural flight of the huge Falcon Heavy rocket. The duo wrapped up their first solar orbit over the weekend, according to the tracking site whereisroadster.com. Yes, it's actually live and active right now. Starman and a Tesla have an orbital period of about 557 Earth days, website calculated, and they've been in space for 560 days as of, well, yesterday, August 19th. At launch, the Roadster's radio is playing David Bowie's Life on Mars. If the car's battery is still working, Starman has now heard that same song more than 150,000 times, and the site provides some other interesting tidbits as well. For example, the Tesla has now traveled more than 760 million miles in space, meaning the car has exceeded its, well, 36,000 mile warranty, more than 21,000 times over. But outside of that, debut flights by rockets are inherently risky, which explains why SpaceX chose to put a dummy payload in rather than a functional satellite on the February 2018 Falcon Heavy launch. Musk said that he chose Starman and Roadster for fun, but the car likely serves a marketing purpose as well. Car and driver will probably make many more laps around our star. Last year, an orbit modeling study calculated that the Roadster will eventually slam into either Venus or Earth. We're not exactly sure, but they predicted it out. It's not going to be a big deal, likely within the next tens of millions of years. Who knows how long it's based on calculations, so who knows how many times Starman and the Roadster are going to be rotating around, but eventually it's going to slam into either Venus or Earth. There is a 6% chance of an Earth impact and a 2.5% chance of a Venus impact within the next million years, the author's study found. So that also meant that the Falcon Heavy rocket boded well in terms of tests and a bunch of other things going on behind the scenes. So yeah, I don't know. I can only imagine, like, down the road, like, human civilization down the road, when something comes slamming into the Earth, they'll be like, what in the world is this? Who put a mannequin in a Roadster? And then somebody will probably say, that's the real person. Oh, and they're dead. I can't wait to see the reaction. Of course, none of us will be around for it. And none of us will have been around for a very, very long time. But I don't know. Depends on how many times this rocket will orbit around the star before it finally slams into something. Hopefully Earth. But we'll see. Moving right along, I like this article. It comes to us from Engadget.com. By the way, if you're interested, yes, you can find the articles mentioned in today's show over at TechNewsGadget.net. Or if you're listening via the podcast, all you really got to do is open up the podcast app that you're listening in. However, you get more show notes or description right there on the app are the links to the articles used in today's show. All you got to do is tap on it and read it and have fun. So, article starts out, ever plop your kids in front of some purposely educational screen-based thing because you need 15 minutes of me time? Peace. Maybe like me, you need to say to yourself, it's 15 minutes, it's an educational app, not too bad, just need to start dinner. And there's nothing wrong with this in theory as a, well, for the author here, two small children, they've learned a lot of things. One thing that's helped, kids love media. Apps, shows, games, you name it. If it's screen-based, kids and their parents readily engage. There's a lot of media out there that claims to be, quote, educational, a term that marketers really need to use when you're like, well, I just need 15 minutes or an hour, sometimes an hour. Now, it's one thing to know and accept that you're buying yourself some time by sticking your kids in front of a screen so that you can wrangle dinner. It's another thing entirely to tell yourself that the app, the game, or whatever is totally okay, desirable even, because it's educational. Over the past 2 years or so of watching at least the author's children here grow on a tight leash, albeit interact with technology, the author developed the theory that all this supposed educational stuff wasn't really making them smarter. It was entertaining for them, sure, and kind of keeping them engaged when you needed a few minutes, and here and there they'd come out with a cool science fact from Nature Cat, or a lovely idea about kindness that they'd practice for exactly 3 seconds before knocking each other out. As for their overall intelligence, they weren't too convinced that any of this was making them any smarter. Maybe it was making them dumber, less curious, less inventive, maybe even a little meaner. And no, obviously no parent that wants to say, I made my kids less than their potential. Parents want to see their children excel in whatever way they can. So, but let's back up for a second. I don't think intelligence means fact-stuffed brains, although knowing real facts help, yes. And it does mean the ability to think critically, asking questions, identifying problems, and experimenting with solutions, and to know when to persist. And, well, kindness needs to fit into the equation as well. Emotional intelligence is intelligence. So does educational technology make kids smarter? We're just kidding ourselves. And if all of this educational technology doesn't make kids smarter, what does? Should smartness really be the end game? Interesting. So the article goes on to explain some more things about the article, and in terms of, well, will technology make your kids smarter? I think I'm going to sum up here a fair amount of the thoughts here, seeing as how I'm a parent myself. You are responsible for training your kids. The TV, the app, the screen they're looking at, whatever, will not teach the kids the things they need to know. You, as the parent, are there to teach them and to reinforce them. Why, might you ask? Because that's the way humans learn. Billions upon billions of humans have done it over millennia. You want to know how it's happened? Well, you're walking, talking proof right now. It's a system that's been handed down to us from parent to child, parent to child, parent to child, all the way back to the beginning. So it's not too difficult to go, if I had a robot raise my children for me, I wouldn't have to do it. See, that's where the Jetsons could come into play, and then that robot nanny could take care of raising the kids, and then I wouldn't have to do anything about it. Nope. You as a parent are still responsible for the child. Why? It's just part of being a parent. And if not, well, shouldn't have had a kid anyway to begin with. But outside of that fact, you are responsible for your child. You're responsible for what goes in their brain. You're responsible for teaching them the difference between right and wrong, the difference between how to act as a child and how to mature into adulthood, to teach them the important things of life so that when they grow up, they are a well-equipped individual, able to handle whatever life throws at them. And if not, well, just gonna be blunt, shouldn't have had kids. Shouldn't have had kids. And the other final point I'll make to this is having a child is a definite maturing process. It shows more maturity, it shows more responsibility, and yes, you're also making a sacrifice to it. You're not a single person anymore. You're not responsible for whatever you wanted to do. Now you have a child to deal with in whatever respect that may be, and so obviously you get to learn really quick. Oh, so this is what adulting's all about. Yeah, adulting with, you know, a child as a parent. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on it. If I'm missing anything or if you're confused about something, let me know in the comments. I'd love to help out in any way I can. Well, in terms of being able to provide some advice, I'm not an expert on it by any means. I'm kind of figuring this out as I go along. Oh, and if you missed that reference, that was a quote back to Avengers Endgame. All right, moving on to some gadget news. OnePlus is launching its first ever TV in September, and the company CEO says it will be a premium product. What exactly does that mean? Well, OnePlus is launching its OnePlus TV in September, according to CEO Pete Lau, telling Business Insider. The primary focus will be on image quality and sound. I've been talking to a lot of users and getting a lot of feedback, and they told me that image is the most important thing to care about. So he's confident that the OnePlus TV has the best image quality. Why? Well, because he benchmarked it against the best. For its first TV, Lau says that the OnePlus benchmarked against the best of the best in TVs, and that the company is using 4K resolution quantum dot or QLED screen panels. QLED panels are more advanced and deliver better brightness and color quality than standard LCD LED panels, but he didn't mention whether HDR would feature on the OnePlus TV. But, it's quite interesting, but one thought comes up. Well, is it kind of like LG's OLED TVs? OLED TVs are the utmost peak of TV screen panel technology, delivering unrivaled contrast and colors, but Lau said that OLED panels are expensive and that the price difference doesn't really match the quality difference. And indeed, OLED TVs typically come with a prior price tag than LCD or QLED TVs, even if OLEDs deliver stunning image quality. It's not an absolute necessity to enjoy your TV shows and movies, at least for the price they usually demand. They're the ultra-premium option for those who can afford it. As for screen sizes, OnePlus didn't have a comment on that, but what can you expect for price tags? Well, he also wouldn't say outright what the OnePlus TV's price would be, but he did say that the OnePlus TV is a premium product, and it'll come with a price tag that will reflect its premium nature, and it will be running on Google's Android TV platform. One of the ways the OnePlus TV will differentiate itself from other smart TVs is the way it'll display content. Instead of showing users a list of streaming apps like Netflix or Hulu, it plans to show you the content you like. The idea here is to remove the step of remembering which streaming app has which TV show or movie you're looking for. Android TV usually includes Google's Assistant, but OnePlus didn't comment on that specifically, so we're not quite sure, but possibly. And as for connectivity between smartphones and TVs, well, Lau mentioned back in 2018 that connectivity between a smartphone and a TV will be a major aspect, and it's still a point of focus. OnePlus plans on an ongoing rollout of features that make use of smartphone connectivity to the OnePlus TV. One initial example he gave included using a keyboard on a smartphone to type in to the OnePlus TV, using it as a remote to navigate around the on-screen keyboard. But nothing too different there. But as for when it will be launched in India first, with the EU, US, and China launches coming later. So stay tuned for more information there. We shall find out more as we know more, obviously. Oh, moving on to some more gadget news. Well, you guys got to take a look at this. The Optiplex 7070 Ultra by Dell. Oh my goodness. Guess where they put the desktop PC? Into a monitor stand. Apparently the idea here was to reduce footprint that is aimed at open floor plan workplaces. The design, which is a bit quirky and obviously different, is aimed at the employee as well as the IT department. And it's a needle that the Optiplex 77 Ultra should be able to thread. Dell is increasingly pitching its devices to end consumers and employees and bundling in tools that make deployment and management easier for corporations. Interestingly enough, here's a couple of points. Enterprises can independently upgrade the PC and display. A monitor display that holds and integrates the PC has physical security options to curb tampering. The design can be used for multiple users in open floor plans, and a desktop can use up to Intel Core vPro i7 processors, 64 gigs of RAM, a solid state drive with up to a 1 or 2 terabyte hard drive. Now with the Optiplex 7070, Dell is really playing for the 2 monitor workspace market and easy swap outs. It can support up to 3 displays as power, data, video, and audio are passed through one cable to a Dell USB-C connected monitor. Not surprisingly enough, Dell happens to be one of the primary vendors of that monitor. The Optiplex 7070 Ultra can also be used to spread Dell's unified workspace and user computing platform. So, man, there's all that information you needed there. But yeah, what do you think? A desktop crammed into this. What is this? A desktop stand? I faintly remember Apple during one of their announcements going, hey, guess what? For like $1,000, you can get a stand. Oh, and somebody's sending me a message. You can get a stand, and it'll be like for your like monitor and stuff or some connection. And then people are like joking around. It's like basically what Apple is saying here, if we're going to make an Apple to Apple comparison, what they're trying to sell you is the equivalent of the handle of the coffee mug. But the handle of the coffee mug costs $1,000, and the coffee cup itself is just, you know, a coffee cup. So this actually has everything in it. Pretty impressive. So with that, moving on to our final article of today. Well, GameStop laid off 100 more employees and in a very interesting turn of events, including members of Game Informer. I can't talk. Can you tell it's been a long day? GameStop has announced that over 100 employees have been laid off. These jobs hit multiple divisions throughout the company, ranging from corporate headquarters to Game Informer magazine. As part of the previously announced GameStop reboot initiative to transform our business for the future and improve our financial performance, we can confirm a workforce reduction was implemented, impacting more than 120 corporate staff positions, representing approximately 14% of our total associate base at our company headquarters, as well as some other offices. Reboot initiative was implemented after GameStop failed to sell itself in 2018. Although there are rumors going on currently of who was going to buy it and were they going to do anything with it, well, the sale never went through. The company is continuing to struggle in the growing digital gaming market. The company has put a greater emphasis on used games and pop culture collectible sales, but both seem to only be slowing GameStop's descent and not necessarily stopping it. While these changes are difficult, they were necessary to reduce costs and better align the organization with our efforts to optimize the business to meet our future objectives and success factors. Unfortunately for several members of the Game Informer staff, the layoffs impacted them as well. The 19 full-time members on the editorial team, 7 have been announced on Twitter that they have been laid off, including a couple managing editors, senior editor, senior associate editors, and associate editors. But if you're interested in looking for talented writers and you happen to be a magazine and editors join your staff, consider reaching out to them. All 7 deserve to continue doing what they did for Game Informer. And yeah, that's it with that. It's just business. I mean, if you're going to try and trim some things up from GameStop standpoint, you got to kind of do some not so nice things to be able to trim away and try and reorient yourself and try to become a more profitable company again before you kind of do close in upon yourself and then implode and then nobody has a job. So obviously that's always the risk with business, but yeah, probably not as much interest to you as it is to me. For me, it's always of interest in terms of how businesses and markets and everything along economics and entrepreneurship goes. That's just one topic that I'm interested in, but I wanted to bring it to the forefront, at least so that you guys are aware. Yeah, this isn't just affect game development, video game studios, AAA rated studios, or indie studios. It also affects game publications and at least news publications for gaming industries, as well as brick and mortar stores as well. So yeah, interesting shakeup indeed. As the market shifts, businesses will have to change demand and product service offerings to keep up with it, and hopefully supply what the market wants. What they want, who knows? They might just want cotton candy and a bunch of Mountain Dew. That's what I want. That's what I want. If you want that, raise your hand as well. All right, and with that, that wraps up this episode of the Lace and Tech News. Thanks for tuning in. New episodes every weekday. Lace and Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment if you're watching the YouTube video. If you're listening via podcast, hey, could you go ahead and leave us a review out on Apple Podcasts or the app that you're currently listening in? It would be greatly appreciated. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.